The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
It's the show that Mark Twain once called smarter'n a blue jay what can talk possum and faster'n a naked fat man riding a bolt of lightning.
So here's your plain-spoken homespun host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks. Welcome to, I think this is hour two, the Eric Metaxas Show. Somebody told me this was Tuesday. I don't know. It's all a blur. Listen, we are talking. We continue my conversation with Sam Sorbo, but in the next few minutes for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk to my friend Terry Mattingly, the journalist. He's got some amazing things to say about how we're going to celebrate Easter at home, I guess. But Sam, we talked in the previous hour about homeschooling, and people can go to samsorbo.com.
Yes.
Okay, samsorbo.com. And but I want to talk to you about you and your current hubby. What's that guy's name? How long you guys been together?
Hercules.
Kevin Sorbo. How many years have you been married?
22 years.
And did you just write a book together? Is that what I understand?
Finally, after 22 years, we finally got it figured out.
Yeah.
So the book's called True Faith, Embracing Adversity to Live in God's Light. What's amazing is we came out with this on February 14th, so Valentine's Day, because it's a book about marriage and movies and miracles. Oh, my.
Marriage and movies and miracles. Oh, my. Okay. Yeah. Can you please explain that?
Well, the idea is we've had our struggles. Kevin's first book was True Strength, and it documented his recovery from three strokes when he was at the ripe old age of 38. It took him 3 years to get better. And so the book sort of details that. And so many people have thanked him for writing the book and have said, it really helped me through. I lost 100 pounds. I got better after my car accident. I beat cancer, because we need stories of hope in our culture.
Right.
And so
the fact that your marriage has endured, because I know you've obviously lost your looks, and that's tough on a man when he marries a beautiful woman and then she turns into what you are today. And I just want to say that my heart goes out to Kevin. He's a godly man. Okay, stop that. I can only say that to beautiful women. But you said movies and miracles. Tell us about movies and miracles.
So we struggled with infertility. We tell that story in this book. And we now have three children. And that's a miracle, because on our first date, he said to me, I know that I'm going to have three kids, boy, boy, girl. Because that's first date chatter. And I said, that's so weird. That's what I'm having, boy, boy, girl.
Whoa.
And so we battled infertility and won the jackpot, so to speak. The making of Let There Be Light is covered in the book. In fact, Sean Hannity wrote a chapter for us. And that was a miracle that movie ever came about. And if you haven't seen Let There Be Light, it is streaming on Amazon.com or Amazon Prime. And it's also available, obviously, on DVD. So we've had a number of miracles.
And so you have three kids?
Yes.
And is it a boy, boy, girl?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to stop and say, God really does do miracles, and he really does talk to us. And it doesn't mean that it happens anytime we want.
Right.
But we need to understand, like, yes, he does that. The fact that he spoke that to your husband and that your husband blabs it on the first date, and then you say, oh, yeah, I also know that I'm good at this. And then it actually happens.
Yeah.
But he lets you go through infertility struggles before that. I mean, that we just need to say, wow, God, you're amazing. That is absolutely amazing. Now let's go to the most boring part of it. Movies. What about movies?
Well, the miracle there is, you know, I was just a mom homeschooling, trying to raise Christian children in a very secular society. And I thought about it. I thought, you know, atheism is a really staunch faith. I wonder what it would be if an atheist had his faith challenged, like my children's faith is challenged every day, eight ways, you know. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, that's a movie I would want to see. And so I called a friend and asked him if he'd write the movie with me. And we made an agreement. And within 2 weeks, Sean Hannity called Kevin. And this wasn't a normal occurrence. He literally picked up the phone and called my husband and said, I want to do a faith-based movie with you. Do you have anything?
It's funny you say that, because Sean Hannity never calls me and asks me questions like that. I'm not bitter.
No. And you shouldn't be, because I think this was like a one-time thing.
I'm kidding. How bizarre is it?
Yes.
That you write this. This is a miracle, Sam. Well, let's be clear in case anybody's, you know, not listening clearly.
Sean also spits when he talks.
So. And yeah, Sean spits when he talks. But seriously, we need to acknowledge these things, that you come up with this idea. Sean Hannity, who knows Kevin, I know, you know, suddenly says, hey, I'm interested in this. And next thing you know, you have a very big deal movie out there.
Well, there's a chapter in the book that Dan Gordon writes called Faith Film, because this film was made on faith. Like, you know, Sean entrusted us with the money to make the film. We made a film. It was just an incredible supernatural thing. The money never chases the film. The money never chases the film. This money chased the film. It said, hey, do you have a film? Because the money's here. That's just crazy. So that was a miracle. There are some other ones in the book. And it's basically just showing people how we get through life using our faith every day. Our faith is with us. My husband likes to say when he speaks, he says, I always had faith, right? He was raised in the church. He always had faith, but he never needed it until that day that he needed it, right? And so we want to encourage people in their faith. We want to encourage marriage, because marriage is, you know, we say marriage is an expression of faith, right? Because the God, marriage, the church, all of that, right? But it's more than that. It's an expression of faith. Like, I'm marrying this person for the rest of my life. That takes a great deal of faith to say that and mean it and adhere to it. And
especially in this day and age when the culture pushes marriages apart. I mean, there's just no question about it that, you know, in the past, divorce was a very rare thing and you would pay a huge price. Today, we're encouraged at the first hint of trouble. You know, probably your soulmate is out there around the corner. So why don't you go try to find your soulmate? That's right out of the pit of hell. It's led so many people to make bad decisions. So it's important for us to understand that faith is one of the main ways that we can stay married to the person we're married to, that God helps us. He wants to help us, and he does help us.
Yeah, and praying for your spouse.
Sam, what's the name of the movie again?
The movie's called Let There Be Light.
That's the movie that
the book's called
thing.
True Faith.
Okay.
Again, just go to samsorbo.com. Everything's there.
All right. But Sam, the book now, how long has the book been out?
Just since Valentine's Day.
So it's like brand new. And obviously you haven't been doing a lot of speaking gigs because we have a coronavirus happening. But fortunately, you can come on this program and we can talk to you about it. And what is Kevin working on these days? Is he like in the garage with a drill press? What is he doing right now?
He's working on his tan. No. He's getting really good workouts in because that's how he gets his frustration out, you know.
Is he getting pumped up for a new movie? What's he doing?
Yeah, no, we've got several projects, but everything's sort of on hold right now. You know, we've got our Miracle in East Texas, which is right there.
Whoa.
And so that's coming out, but we put the date off. So we everything is sort of in suspension. It's just, and like you, you know, we do a lot of speaking. And he travels a lot and he's stuck at home. The calendar just cleared, just like you, you know. So, you know, it's a struggle.
Yeah.
I'm cooking a lot. I'm really enjoying just being at home and not having to pack and not having to unpack and that. But I do miss it. I do miss life.
Isn't that amazing? Are any of your kids at home?
They're all home.
They are all home. Isn't that amazing? I love it. I love it. Well, we're out of time. When we come back, folks, I'm talking to my friend Terry Mattingly. But Sam, it's always fun to have you on. I want to encourage people to go to samsorbo.com. And we want to reiterate that schooling is something you probably can do and you probably should try. Just think of the money you'll save. Oh, my goodness. That's just the beginning. No, seriously, it's wonderful. Sam, thank you so much. Give our love to Kevin, please.
Thank you. Will do. You take care.
Snow. Seen that. And ivory on towers. Someone called us Babylon.
Hey, folks. As promised in this segment, we have my friend Terry Mattingly. He is the founder of GetReligion.org. If you want to find him or any commentary on how journalism doesn't get religion, get it? Go to GetReligion.org. There's all kinds of great stuff there. Terry has also been a columnist nationally syndicated for it is now into the decades. And Terry, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
We're going to talk about Easter. But before we go into that, Terry, this is a really strange time. This pandemic quarantine is affecting everyone. You look different. I don't know if it's just my brain or whatever, but I think of you as you were always clean shaven as a Cherokee Indian. And I see you've got a beard now and you had a kind of cocoa complexion that might suggest an octoroon or something along those lines. And yet now you are extraordinarily pale. I see you have glasses. Terry, what is happening?
Well, I am an old guy, over 60, with asthma and some other conditions. So I'm very much an at-risk person during this crisis. So I've been in the house now, except for an occasional drive around to look at the mountains and get groceries. I've been in the house now for about 3 weeks. And
What does that have to do with the beard, Terry? You know what? You're trying to fool my audience. You're trying to fool my audience.
It's the early 1980s, Eric.
Now that you mention it, all right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And you're wearing a T-shirt I've not seen before.
Oh, well, I wore that in your honor.
You want to see it? You ever think about that? What is
the tackiest thing I could wear to salute New York would be a St. Patrick's Day I Love New York shirt.
Well, as you know, this program is seen all over the world, and we're not kidding. So, pardon me?
This was purchased in the Dante's Inferno of Lower Penn Station.
Hardcore
New York.
Okay, well, listen, we want to talk to you about journalism. We want to talk to you about Easter or Pascha, as it is correctly called by those of us who know the Greek language. But tell us what you wanted to talk about, because I thought this is a spectacular topic for the strange time we're all going through.
Well, it's the strange time that sets the context. And we're seeing churches. I mean, it's one thing for mega churches and things like that to know production values and know how to put something on television,
right.
And see some of them adjust. But the whole idea of small Catholic and Orthodox churches and Lutheran churches and people who do liturgical worship and who divine liturgy in the mass, all of a sudden they're on television. and you've got people all over America and the world having to adjust to worshiping, you know, sitting in front of a computer. Well, now their priests do the liturgy. Now, our bishop did what I think was a very wise thing. I'm Eastern Orthodox, and our bishop said, I want the divine liturgies to continue, but only with a priest, a deacon, two or three chanters. In other words, no, don't break the 10 people rule. And then everyone else, stay home, stay safe. Nobody at risk goes to the sanctuary. So the services are going on. And this ancient church is adapting to virtual life. I mean, we've got online coffee hours, and we're doing Christian education online.
Online coffee hours? Do they still have Cremora and Uban coffee?
I'm sure if you
want that coffee hour. Let me ask you an important question, Terry, because this is one of the main reasons I wanted to speak with you. What we're going through now is utterly unprecedented for low church people, for most evangelicals.
Right.
This is not a big deal. But when you're talking about the sacramental traditions, when you're talking about the Catholics and the Eastern Orthodox Christians, there's something different. In other words, the idea that a Catholic believer cannot take communion this weekend or next weekend, what does this mean? In other words, I don't understand what that would mean to somebody who has been taking communion every week for their entire lives and attending mass every week for their entire lives. This is utterly unprecedented. And, excuse me, somebody cannot come to your house and give it to you, I guess. I don't know. Maybe they're doing that. What do we do?
Well, the bishops will let the priest do that if someone is sick. In other words, the minute you're sick or in threat, people are understanding that, you know, rules need to be bent and shelter in place, you know, and your priest will need to come to you. The liturgical churches actually have centuries of ritual and prayers and everything else for dealing with times of plague.
Really?
The other day we did a service that ended with an ancient section of psalms and prayers for times of plague, very specific prayers, and the priest adapted them to include the coronavirus, you know, and to pray for New York and to do whatever else. But these are really ancient prayers. When it comes to plagues, the Black Death and everything, this is not the church's first go. The really different thing here is having the technology available to do something else. And when you put this during Holy Week, Eric, you're absolutely right to focus on Holy Communion. I mean, your computer can't give you Holy Communion. But at the same time, during Holy Week for Catholics and the Orthodox, the belief is that you are taking part in these events. You are taking part of Good Friday. I'm sure you remember the beautiful service where the Orthodox read every single word of all the gospel accounts of the Passion. It takes like 4.5 hours. You know, and along the way, there's a huge cross and they nail an icon to it. And this is really gripping stuff to be there.
And it takes so long that, speaking as somebody who has been at these Greek Orthodox services, it really challenges your theology and tempts you perhaps to become a Buddhist or an evangelical.
Well, you certainly feel it. And you kind of come out the backside of that at Pascha with this incredible burst of joy. You know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and it's time to feast. You've been fasting for 2 months.
Well, for the Greeks, it's time to eat tripe, magheritsa, or porezzi. But the main point that you're making here, which is really significant, and it's why I wanted to have you, not just a journalist and religion expert, but an Eastern Orthodox Christian believer yourself, to try to explain to people the sacramental quality of most of the historical faith for 2,000 years. The idea that you could watch a sermon online and, you know, that's it. And I remember when I started going to Tim Keller's church, Redeemer, the lack of the sacramental aspect. We would meet in a bloodless college auditorium. There was a very wonderful lecture, which was the sermon. And the beyond that, there wasn't much. And then communion was, as many evangelical churches experience every week, you know, it was teensy weensy crackers and then teensy weensy thimbles full of grape juice. When you've grown up in a sacramental tradition where communion is holy, and when that moment comes in the divine liturgy, when you line up for communion from the golden chalice, the sanctity of it, it's incomparable to what a lot of evangelicals have experienced, the holiness of communion. So when you're saying now that, by the way, that's not happening this Easter, it's not happening Good Friday, it is stunning. It's absolutely stunning to think that the Greek Orthodox Church in my town, Danbury, Connecticut, where I go every year with my dad, you know, all of those things that they do, the Palm Sunday thing, all this incredible stuff, which is physical and communal, it's not happening. It's wild.
Well, here's the thing. I know a lot of Orthodox bishops are convinced they're going to let it happen, that people just won't be there, which to me in some ways makes the drama even greater. And this is what I'm trying to get reporters to understand. There's a legitimate story here, and it's not just happening in Rome, where we're probably going to have Pope Francis do the Stations of the cross in an empty Roman Colosseum with no more than 10 people there.
But a heck of a camera crew, which most churches don't have.
Yeah. This is going to be happening locally. This attempt to carry on the tradition and re-symbolize these, well, they're not symbols if you really believe in what's happening. This is going to happen locally, all over America. And I think it's a dramatic story that I hope people realize that it's not just Rome. I mean,
excuse me, we're gonna go to a break. We'll be back, folks, with Terry Mattingly. This is the Eric Metaxas Show, Bunker Video Edition. Folks, welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking to my friend Terry Mattingly. If you want to know more about what he does, you go to getreligion.org. Terry is a journalist in the field of religion. And Terry, you've been telling us that there is a gigantic and couldn't be more gigantic story this Easter when churches, for example, every Catholic church, every Eastern Orthodox church, any church that has a high sense of liturgy and sacrament, everything is going to be different this year. So tell us more about how this is going to go down for the average believer.
Well, there's so many angles to this. The book of liturgies for the Orthodox during Palm Sunday to Pascha, that book is about 600 pages long. That's how much liturgy and service takes part during that week. Now, normally a priest who's doing all that kind of feeds off the people and feeds off the drama and the community and the shared love of Christ and other things that go on in those events. Think of the priests who are going to be doing this virtually alone. Now, you know, with their iPhone sitting out there on a tripod winking at them, while they do all of this amazing liturgy and symbolism, think of the moment, you'll remember this, on Good Friday when they carry the tomb of Christ around the church three times in the dark, you know, and all the people are with candles there and singing songs mourning the death of Christ.
It's one of the most beautiful things that I've experienced in the Greek Orthodox liturgy. It's very emotional. And it's the definition of sacramental and incarnational. You just feel like this is real. We're enacting a funeral. There's weeping. Actually, the hymns are extremely moving, and the words are so poetic about the death of God. It's very moving, very moving.
So I'm wondering, and I'm waiting to hear from our bishops on what we're going to be doing or not doing during Holy Week. What if, picture this in your mind, and I'll give you a New York image to give you another parallel. What if the people came and we all stood all the way around the church in a giant circle, standing 10 to 15 feet apart, singing those hymns, and they carried the tomb, the bier, inside that circle around the church? If anything, to me, it would only make it more emotional, because we've all been apart. We haven't been able to take part in these things. It would be a tremendous feeling of community, even just to be able to share that one moment together. Because our bishop put it this way. He said, this is not the Lent we wanted, but this is still a very great Lent we are all going through. We are having to think about our faith in new ways. We're having to practice our faith in new ways. Nothing seems the same. Yet the messages are still there. The symbols are still there. The sacraments are still there. The truth is still there. Eric, a lot of people right now, the question I'm writing my column about right now, how do you go to confession under a shelter in place? And you're supposed to go to confession during Great Lent to prepare for Easter and to prepare for Pascha. I'm interviewing a priest who was doing confessions out in the middle of a parking lot, 10 feet away from a car, and people would drive up in their car and he would hear their confession, and then they would drive off and then the next car would come in. But he was trying to find some way to get close enough to his people to be able to hear private confessions.
Great reason to become a Protestant.
All of this, there are stories here to be told, and they are once in a lifetime stories. This is our Spanish flu. This is our time, you know, in our generation, when we're going to know and experience what a lot of believers have gone through in previous centuries. Nowhere near to the degree and pain that they experienced. But it's an amazing story. And I'm hoping people just don't settle for covering what goes on in Rome and maybe a drone shot of the fact that nobody's getting to do the Hajj in Mecca. In Judaism, there's an interesting story. I mean, in that the whole Passover Seder is supposed to be multi-generational. Well, how do you do that if coming close to your grandparents, who are supposed to be like the most honored people at, you know, for the Seder meal, how do you do a multi-generational Seder right now? You know what Seder dinners mean to New York. I mean, there's this, and you can tell I'm emotional about this. This is a huge story, and it's coming to every zip code in America in one form or another.
Let me ask you, Terry, where are you right now? Because I should have asked you that when we started.
I'm in my home office in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, up against the face of the Cumberland Mountains at the Cumberland Gap. I'm in Southern Appalachia.
That's way too much specificity. What kind of trees are there? No, just kidding. Oak Ridge, is that where the Oak Ridge boys are from?
Well, more important, it's where the Oak Ridge National Laboratory is, which is where they're doing everything they can to crack the virus question.
You're kidding.
No, I mean, the world's fastest computer is on the other side of a hill from my house at the 12,000-person Oak Ridge National Laboratory, which the president has sent out orders that all the major national labs the government has semi-control over is supposed to be working on this. So
this is huge news. Okay, we're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Terry Mattingly. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
The only block of sun, hey, rain and snow on everyone. So many things.
Loving you isn't the right thing to do. How can I ever change things that I feel? If I could.
Hey, folks, welcome back for a final segment with my friend Terry Mattingly, who is a journalist. You can find out more about what he's thinking at getreligion.org. I highly recommend you go to getreligion.org, follow them on Twitter. Terry, I was just asking you where you were, and you said you're in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. I assume that's where the Oak Ridge Boys are from.
They took their name from there. I mean, they don't hang out at the local restaurants or anything like that. I haven't seen them. I wouldn't know them if I spotted them. But anyway.
But they all do have beards, I think, most of them. And yeah. By the way, by now, they're the Oak Ridge Men.
That's more than true, I'm yeah. sure.
But you were saying that there's a laboratory
yeah.
just over the hill, over yonder in T'other Holler from where you are, over by the swimming hole. And you said that that is – I mean, this is kind of an amazing coincidence that I'm just talking to you and you're telling me about this. Tell us again, what is near you?
Well, the Oak Ridge National Laboratory was created to build the atomic bomb. You remember the Manhattan Project?
I think they succeeded, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. And this was where a lot of that went down. This is where they – you know, did the processing of all of what they needed to build the bomb. The bomb was actually constructed in Los Alamos, New Mexico. But Oak Ridge was called the secret city because it did not appear on any maps. It was created by the U.S. Corps of Engineers. And for a decade or so, you had to have a security pass to even drive into town. One of the old security towers is a couple of blocks from my house down the hill. But it's a very interesting and unique place. I'm told it has the highest concentration of PhDs per capita of any town its size in the world. Very unusual place to live. An internationally known scientific location sitting in the middle of Southern Appalachia.
And what brought you there, since I know you're not a nuclear physicist?
But my son is an engineer. Also, I wanted to live closer to family in North Georgia and Nashville. And there's a wonderful church here that we knew we wanted to be a part of. And we wanted to get back into the Tennessee mountains. You'll remember when you and I first met online, I was living in Johnson City, Tennessee, up in the mountains up near the Virginia border.
Yeah, that's over 20 years ago.
Yeah, decades. My wife and I definitely wanted to return to the Southern Mountains to retire eventually and make this our home.
And so to get back to Easter, is yeah. Eastern Orthodox Easter the same this year, or is it divided by a week or 2 weeks? Because obviously one goes by the Gregorian calendar, yeah. the other goes by the Julian calendar. And growing up, it was one of the strangest things to celebrate Easter and Palm Sunday and everything at a different time from basically everyone else. What is the differential this year?
1 week, which means there's the funniest irony to actually see this is when you're observing Palm Sunday, you know, as Orthodox, and you're
yeah.
people driving by, going to Easter services or coming back from Easter services, and they're looking at you going like, now, I've heard of setting your clock wrong, getting the hour wrong, but
right.
like a week?
Right.
You know, I mean, people that don't realize what's going on. So to me, the ultimate ironic distance is 1 week, because while we're processing around right. the church with Palm Sunday, people are driving by going to Easter services.
Calendrical irony. I've never heard of that before. Well, I have to tell you, for people who don't know, you know, the Eastern Orthodox Church, and again, I grew up in the Greek Orthodox Church, and you're Eastern Orthodox, it celebrates Easter at a different time usually, but there are years, I think once yeah. every fourth or fifth year, it's the same as the Catholic and Protestant Easters. And then there are years when it can be as distant as 5 weeks away.
Yeah, 4 or 5 weeks. Far. Yeah, depending on the moon and other ways that ancient people calculated, did calendars. Eric, I promised you another image for listeners to be able to try to picture in their mind for the kind of drama that we're talking about here. Right. This whole idea of these ancient symbols taking place under the most unusual of circumstances. Okay, now picture, back up a second. Picture St. Patrick's Day in New York, where you have this massive bacchanalian secularized St. Patrick's.
Not that the Irish are heavy drinkers, because we can't say that on this program.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to.
But I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. It's turned into like a politically correct secular who gets to march, who doesn't get to march. Well, New York did the right thing and canceled that march this year. It was one of the first things that was canceled.
Yeah.
It really let you know this was going to be serious.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, imagine the symbolism if Cardinal Dolan had walked out into the empty streets with just a couple of altar boys with candles and a huge icon of St. Patrick and reclaimed an actual St. Patrick's Day prayer march in the empty streets of New York. Picture how dramatic that would have been. Well, the other day, Pope Francis walked through the empty streets of Rome to visit some of the churches of the martyrs of previous plagues. And I thought that was a tremendous symbolic event that a lot of the press missed. Imagine if he decides to do the Stations of the Cross on Good Friday in the empty streets of Rome, going from church to church. You know, it's the drama of this. If anything, a lot of these symbols, the power of them are going to be cranked up even more.
Yeah.
By the poignancy and the symbolism of what this all means. The other story that's going to happen someday, who knows when, I hope the press doesn't miss it. When these churches that have not been able to meet together forever, for months, and I think it's going to be months, I think it's going to be probably early June, late May, early June, that we're back together again. Can you imagine what those first church services are going to be like? It's going to be Pascha all over again, you know, when these churches are finally able to reunite face to face.
That's exactly right. There is something certainly unprecedented about what we're going through. And part of what makes it unprecedented is that we don't know when it's going to end. Mm-hmm. We don't know how it's going to end. Every day that passes, it gets a little stranger. The terra is a little more incognita. But with regard to the religious rituals, Terry, I just want to thank you for being willing to talk about this. I think your image, of the initial image of people, standing in that circle, with the, I can't remember the Greek name. Anyway, we're out of time, but that's a beautiful image. I hope somebody listening will adopt that at their Eastern Orthodox Church. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org, thank you. God bless you.
Glad to be here. Thanks, friend.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Albin, Chris, James, we're all here. We're hanging out. And by the way, I've got to tell you, tomorrow we have John the Situation's Mirac is coming on the program.
Wow.
From the Jersey Shore or Dallas, wherever he is with the Beagles. John the Situation's Mirac is coming on the program tomorrow. We also have the Pences. Now, when I say the Pences, I'm talking about Second Lady Karen Pence. And her daughter, Charlotte Pence, they're going to be on. It's an encore program tomorrow with them. We should also mention, my goodness, there's so much to mention. Heaven, how we got here.
Yeah.
Albin, this Friday, we did this a year ago on Good Friday.
Yeah. It was a different.
During a radio drama, a special thing this Friday, Good Friday. It is called Heaven, How We Got Here. And it is told in the voice of the thief who died on the cross next to Jesus, who the one who said to him, to whom Jesus said, "Today we will be together in paradise." It's an amazing idea, and somebody has written it into this beautiful radio play. So this Friday on this program, that will be on.
Yes, Pastor Colin. Pastor Colin Smith wrote the book, and he's going to be a guest tomorrow in Hour 1, too. So we're going to hear from him about this great Heaven, How I Got Here.
Oh, so tomorrow, Thursday, we're having him on.
Yeah. Wednesday. Tomorrow, Wednesday.
Tomorrow, Wednesday?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Tomorrow, we're having him on. But then Thursday, we're having the Benham brothers on.
Yes. David Benham. No, just David Benham, because he was arrested. Yeah.
Look, they're identical twins. Who cares? We're having one of the Benham brothers on. David is coming on, and we're going to talk to him about being arrested on the sidewalk because he was standing in front of an abortion clinic. They were doing appropriate social distancing, and they were arrested. Wait till you hear that. That won't be till Thursday. But I have to tell you, it is amazing to me what is going on out there. So we're going to have him on. Tomorrow we have on what?
Tomorrow's Smirak, and second hour is...
Oh, I already said that. That's right. We've got Smirak and the Pences on tomorrow. Now, you know what? I want to mention, too. I keep mentioning it. We have two big sponsors on the program, honorboundcoffee.com and mypillow.com. Both of them are products and companies we believe in really, really strongly. Mike Lindell has been such a hero. If you ever order a sheet or a pillow or a mattress top or anything not from him, I'm going to ask you why. And if you don't use our discount code, Eric, I'm also going to ask you why, because we have a huge discount code. But these people are heroes. Mike Lindell, I just love him. I've gotten to know him, and he is the definition of the real deal. He lives out his faith, which is a pretty new faith when you read his story in his book. It's an amazing story. But Mike Lindell and MyPillow.com, they're sponsors on the program. And Honor Bound Coffee, no kidding. Every morning I make this coffee and I think, what a cool thing. They're giving 100% of their profits to helping military families. I mean, I still can't even believe that's true, except I know it's true because I know Seth and Pete Talbot. They told the story on this program. What a beautiful idea for a company. So if you're looking for a way to give back or give to military families, all you have to do is buy coffee from honorboundcoffee.com.
And one more thing. Can I say Safe Spaces? No Safe Spaces? That's a great movie, by the way.
I want to promote that because, well, we've already said why. But if you're looking for something to watch. Well, folks, God bless you. We'll catch you later. Thanks for listening.